It's the Lethal Weapon sequel. It's Danny Glover.
Mm-hmm. Nah, he's getting too old for this shit.
Do you know how old he was in that movie when he made it?
Oh, probably like 35.
He was 40.
Yeah, he was
playing older, but he was 40. He was too old for this shit.
What's up, nerds? It's basketball. Welcome to Horse, a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. My name is Mike Schubert, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, the Adam and I doing our drama draft recap last time to us forgetting about the Jontay Porter betting scandal and thus completely ruining the ranking of how dramatic the Toronto Raptors were. It's Adam Amawala. Adam, how's it going?
It's going well. I guess ultimately, it didn't create that much drama for the Raptors because they were just like, he's
just
gone,
so quick.
We're just
such
not...
a...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It was such an obvious, like, this guy's so unimportant to the league that Adam Silver's like, amazing. I can make an example of him quickly and swiftly, and we won't have to talk about how gross sports betting is in the NBA. So, yeah, weirdly, right. It was, like, not that dramatic.
No.
But anyway, we're here to talk about basketball, and we've got a whole lot of fun basketball to discuss. So how about we get ready to discuss that basketball by going to the Teal Memorial Locker Room, where nothing is plagued by sports betting. There's no ads for Prize Picks and all the other crappy companies out there.
It's actually banned. It's banned in that locker room.
Gosh, that'd be great. It's getting to the point where, like, if ESPN and certain, like, TV providers, like YouTube TV, all these things that have various NBA packages, League Pass, if they were like, hi, for $10 a month, you can watch basketball. And for $12 a month, you won't ever see an advertisement about gambling. I'd be like, I might have to pay $200. Like, it's excessive. I would love to not see it.
Sports betting in modern society is the equivalent of giving someone the keys to a house that is fully stocked with junk food and then being like, well, why are they gaining weight?
Why are their teeth falling out?
It's like, well, what did you think was going to happen? They're surrounded by it constantly.
It stinks because, like, it should be, I think people should be allowed to do it. It should be a legal thing that people can do.
Sure.
It shouldn't be so heavily promoted. It's wild.
And it shouldn't be as easy as it is to do.
No, it's too simple and it's too everywhere. But let's talk about basketball and the fun stuff that we actually do like. You know who's always talking about fun stuff that they do like and we always like having them around?
I have to assume our patrons and especially our producer level patron.
Yes. Shout out to all the patrons. Shout out to our producer level patrons as well. Polly Burge, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls. Bang, bang. Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed. Steph Curry is getting sick of Not Like Us.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw that video, but he was like, hey, there's other songs and he better watch out or there's going to be a diss track about him.
This is one of those things where I'm a big proponent of you can think a thing and not say a thing. Mm. And this is coming from someone who gets a lot of comments on social media of like, I didn't think that's what you would look like. You can just think that and not say it to make me feel bad about myself. But I also think in this certain situation, if you're Steph Curry and you don't like a Kendrick Lamar song, you can just think it and not say it because you know who you clearly don't ever want to upset? Kendrick Lamar.
Right.
It has become clear, crystal clear. Do not upset this man ever. Ever.
Yeah, I don't even think it's a bad take, but he just probably shouldn't have said it.
Just say, and like, I get it. It is getting played way too much. I think that's completely valid. It's overplayed, and that's okay. It's especially hard when a song you really like gets overplayed. But like, dude, you just gotta keep that zipped. You don't have to tell people. Just like, zip. Not gonna. Chase Underulo, Haley Zink, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby as a vampire, Chelsea's cousin, Ginger Spurs boy, Balls to the Walls, and Mats Furley.
Yes, who did send us an email saying that you pronounced it perfectly.
Oh, cool. Great fun. Even the little flair that we put on the Furley. I'm happy that we can do that. But yes, shout out to our producer level patrons. And you know who also I would love to shout out at this point?
Probably our sponsor, Shaker and Spoon.
Our sponsor, Shaker and Spoon. Shout out to Shaker and Spoon. They are a cool company where all you got to do is supply some liquor and they will supply everything else so that you can make cool, fancy cocktails for you and your friends or just yourself if you want to not share. But all you got to do is get that booze. They give you everything else. They give you the instructions and the ingredients to make 4 servings of 3 different drinks that are all very different, but all use the same base liquor. And it's cool and it's fun. And if you want to try out cocktail mixology stuff or you just want to have a fun little party and not spend a million zillion dollars on cocktails, because that's now what cocktails cost. It's not just New York anymore. Now it's everywhere. So everyone is feeling our pain that cocktails now cost more than like full meals at restaurants. So if you don't want to deal with that situation, you can use Shaker and Spoon. And if you go to Shaker and shakerandspoon.com/horse. You can get $20 off your first box. It's about 50% off, which is pretty sweet. So shakerandspoon.com/horse. Do that if you're celebrating something fun or maybe watching the Olympic basketball that is in our very near future. Check out Shaker and Spoon today. All right. Now, unless you're listening on Patreon, where you get access to ad-free episodes, you are going to hear words from a few sponsors who make it feasible for us to not be in the red making this podcast. And once those ads are complete, we will get back to this episode of Horse. All right, Adam, what's going on in the magical Mama Walla world?
Magical Mama Walla world. Wow, what a place that must be. Not a whole lot of new stuff to report. I think it's all the stuff that I mentioned the last time. So thank you to everybody who came out in Denver and Boulder. I am lucky that I got out there, because if I had flown on Friday, I would not have. So I got very, very fortunate.
All right, the big Microsoft explosion day.
Yeah. But stuff coming up in August. I'm going to be in Burlington, Vermont. That's one night only, Sunday, August 11th at Vermont Comedy Club. It also looks like I'm going to be in Tulsa for a couple nights doing a comedy festival at the end of August. I'm not like 100% sure about that, but I believe that I will be. And that's the last weekend in August, which is, I think, the 23rd and 24th. It's called the Blue Whale Comedy Festival. So I'll be in a couple shows there if I end up going out. In September, towards the end of the month, the final weekend of the month, I will be in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And then I will report on more stuff later. But that's what I got for now. What about you?
I've got the same stuff that I had announced before. So Berkeley, California, Nashville, Tennessee, and Atlanta, Georgia, all in August. But if you are listening to this as it comes out, then the tickets should be live for a bunch of my upcoming shows. That would include New York, Vienna, Virginia, which is very close to DC, Toronto, Ontario, Boston, Massachusetts, New Orleans, Louisiana, Dallas, Texas, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I think most of, if not all of those, will be live at this point in time. Some of them might still be coming soon, but you can head on over to schub.es/tour to check that out. All those shows are for the Noose Olympian, except for the New Orleans show, which is half TNO, half Potterless, since I've never done a Potterless show in New Orleans. That was supposed to be the first show of my tour in spring of 2020. Ha 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 ha. But yeah, new shows on the horizon, so that's fun. But yeah, I think that kind of wraps up what I've got going on. So let's get into the rest of the episode. Do we have an NB Q&A?
Yeah, we have a WNB Q&A. And this was an email that I meant to respond to, but now I'm responding live in real time on an episode. This email came from Mitchell Small. The subject said WNBA All-Star Game Watch Party. And the message said, "Hi guys, I'm trying to pull together my own watch party for the WNBA All-Star Game, but my friend group is still new to the W and aren't as big of fans as I am yet. I'm sure that many of your listeners are in similar positions and would love to have someone to watch this premier event with. I know it's probably too short of notice, but I was wondering if you guys would be able to organize a Patreon-exclusive online watch party. I would definitely pay to join that." So, Mitchell, obviously, we did not do that. Apologies. I was out in Colorado doing shows. I did watch the game. We're going to discuss it in a little bit, and I know Shubes did as well. But I'm going to make you what I think is a promise that we can probably keep. I think we should try to do at least one of the WNBA finals games as like a live stream sort of thing. So I think let's try to, you know, commit to that as long as we're both in town. But Mitchell, great idea. I hope you did actually pull that off with some friends of yours, because it was a particularly great game.
Yeah, I think what you could do for anyone trying to convince your friends to watch the WNBA All-Star Game specifically in the future is they actually try in this one, which is cool.
What a novel concept.
Especially in the Olympic year, because if you were unaware, this year, and they do this for Olympic ones, is they will have a team of the Team USA team, and then they will have a team of everyone else that was not on the roster but is playing well enough in the WNBA to be considered an all-star. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, the people not on the Olympic team, they got a little something to prove, and they have some stakes, and it's fun to watch one with some actual stakes. And I think even in the regular WNBA All-Star Game, which happens in non-Olympic years, they still try, they still put in effort, and it's still a good watch. So I think that's the main pitch for any of these going forward, is just like they actually try in it. And then if you're trying to pitch people just like watching WNBA games, I think you just got to get people just to like watch a bit of it, and then they will realize it's fantastic basketball. So maybe you send them like a YouTube clip, a particularly good ending to a game or a replay of a game, or, you know, when they do streams on things like Amazon Prime for free or Twitter for free, like let your friends know.
Oh, there is way more WNBA that is accessible this season than there's ever been before, like far and away.
Right. it's really easy to see it. It's on the major channels if you have cable. It's on streaming platforms if you have streaming platforms.
And League Pass is
randomly
nothing.
Yeah, especially if you buy now. Like the post, I think post All-Star Game League Pass is me. I think I did it
it's
last.
Like 20 bucks.
I did it a couple. I think it's even less than that. I'm pretty sure 2 years ago, me and my buddy Ricky did it. And I think, yeah, it was either $10 or $20. It was either $10 total and I gave him a $5 right. bill, or it was $20 total and I gave him a $10 bill. But like,
it's
yeah.
probably less than what you would spend on one drink unless you're smart enough to use shaker and spoon.
Ayo, ayo, ayo. So yeah, I think that's the pitch. I think people who don't want to watch the WNBA or think they don't want to watch it just have never watched it because it's high quality content. So just get people to look and they'll be like, oh, these girls can hoop. And then boom.
Or they don't watch it because it's like their whole personality.
Yeah, which like what a fun personality to have. I think in that case, get new friends. But yeah, that can conclude MBQ&A. And now we can get into full court press. Get it like the news. So that was a thumbs up from Adam, which works well in a podcast. I'm assuming it was a Simon related thumbs up. Okay, more nods. Cool, cool, cool. I will continue to talk. But yes, as we alluded to, the WNBA All-Star Weekend happened. It was very cool. They did a lot of fun things. Much like the NBA All-Star Weekend, you've got your day of other competitions of sorts, like the skills challenge and the 3-point contest. And then you have the actual WNBA All-Star game itself the next day. So there was some cool stuff going around all weekend.
Yeah, I didn't watch the skills challenge because I think it's bad in both leagues, but I did watch the 3-point contest. I don't know that I realized Jonquel Jones was that good of a shooter.
Yeah, what was very fun about this WNBA 3-point contest is that they had some big post players in there. Stephanie Dolson yeah.
And she's
and
leading the league
Jones.
In percentage, I guess. Dolson.
Dolson is now? Wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I believe so.
Good for her. So that's cool. It's just like it when you saw the lineup, you're like, this is not exactly who I would have expected. And Sabrina decided not to try to defend her title. I'm not sure exactly what factors went into that decision. But it was a fun one, and you had Alicia Gray win not only the skills challenge earlier, but then also the 3-point contest, and they have like significant cash prizes. So I think it was like 50 grand each. So she just wow. like won $100,000 on
Damn.
The same day, which like might be more than her salary. So like
yeah.
that's pretty cool. I think that's another factor in why the WNBA All-Star Game stuff is cool, is because like that's heavily incentivized. Mm-hmm. If you are going to be getting, I'm just going to look up Alicia Gray's contract real quick, but
yeah.
like she may have significantly increased her. She definitely did, but I wonder how much.
Well, that's gotta stink for Jonquel Jones, because she had a chance. She got to go second, and it came down to the final ball that was worth 2 points that would have given her a 1-point victory, and she missed it.
Oh, crushing. But
yeah.
Okay, so here's what it says. I've looked up the stats. It says that Aflac committed $55,000 to each of the winners of the skills challenge and the 3-point contest. So that was $110,000. And then there is a blurb. I guess it's about, it's just like, what is this website? It's very confusing. It's Gamecock Central, which I guess is South Carolina, where I'm mm-hmm. assuming she went to, yeah, where she went to college. So from Gamecock Central, it says, in addition to her $185,000 base salary she will earn through her contract with the Atlanta Dream, Gray's total earnings on the season will now surpass $300,000, $300,150.
It's a great
this
weekend.
Amount is more, yeah, so like it ends up making more than the Supermax contract of $235,000. So because she did so well in the All-Star Game stuff, she's more than a Supermax player.
And she was also on the All-Star team, not the Olympic team, right?
Right, yes.
So she just won the whole weekend.
She just had a great weekend.
Yeah.
A fantastic weekend. Now, if you want to talk about the other winner of the weekend, you got to talk about Erike Ogunbowale, because, oh my goodness,
dude,
she absolutely balled out. And I am not a betting man, but if I was, I for sure would have put money on this, because she was like the true snub of the Olympic team. She actually withdrew herself from the selection process when it was seeming like she wasn't going to get picked. I think just to kind of like remove the drama of it and just focus on the season, which fine. But she put up absurd numbers and truly led the team. She had 34 points. She had 6 assists, 2 steals, 3 rebounds, like shot 8 of 13 from
but
three.
Most notably, she had 34 points in the second half.
Yeah.
She didn't score in the first half.
Ridiculous.
34 points in a half is absolutely ridiculous for NBA, WNBA.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it doesn't count in like the official record books because it's an all-star game, but has anyone ever scored 34 points and a half in women's basketball?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. It was impressive stuff. She played so well and really kind of cemented, hey, maybe you should have reconsidered me.
Yeah. And she's also like, for anyone who's not aware of her like background or where she played in college, she played at Notre Dame. And in back-to-back games in the Final Four, she hit a game winner over UConn to send them to the Final Four and then hit a buzzer beater to win the championship at Notre Dame. Two games, which we'll share the clips to, which were called by Adam Amin, who commentates the Bulls and has been doing all the USA men's games. He's great.
Mm, very fun. Cool. Yeah. No, those are great clips. I remember those moments when they happened. They're just, gosh, that's like peak March Madness kind of stuff. But what's also funny is Alicia Gray also had a fantastic game in the All-Star game, 16 points, and went 9 of 10 from the free throw line. So, yeah, just had herself a weekend, as did
everybody. No, yeah, nobody needs that two-week break more than she does.
Yeah, so now we're in an interesting situation with the WNBA where they just take a break while all of the Olympics goes on, which it's an interesting thing to kind of see how these teams will come back, because you've got some teams like the Aces where a lot of their players are on the Olympic team. So will they be tired? You have other teams where, okay, you've got a lot of international players that are on Olympic teams, like the Storm have a good amount of people on international rosters. They got two women on the Australian team, and then Jewel Lloyd is on the American team. So there's a lot of interesting things that comes into play with a WNBA season when it's an Olympic year. So I'm intrigued to see how it will affect the rest of the season. But we've got men's Olympic basketball on the horizon. We've got women's Olympic basketball on the horizon. LeBron James was just named to be Team USA across all of Team USA's flag bearer. He's the first men's basketball player to do it. And I love that they have to keep saying that, because Sue Bird did it first in 2020.
Cool.
She's
cool.
The first basketball player to do it. So the fact that they have to finally, it's so nice and refreshing for men to finally have the stupid gender qualifier before any of their accomplishments. So just really nice that they have to keep saying that he's the first male basketball player. Oh, it's so nice. So nice. Because Sue. But yeah. Yes. Thank you, Bird Noises. But yeah, I mean, look, there's been some Olympic pre-games, like the USA Showcase stuff. The team has been doing well. They've been like closer than you would expect, but I think they kind of just like had their foot off the gas a little bit.
They barely beat Germany. They barely beat South Sudan, which that was a pretty surprising one.
That they're such a fun story as a team, though. So cool. Like their program is very new and kind of rose out of nowhere almost. Their coach is assistant coach with the Knicks, who was inspired to coach the Olympic team by Sam Presti, who runs the Thunder. Just like, what a cool story South Sudan is.
A very cool story. And we're actually going to do a slightly larger kind of Olympic preview as a little Patreon post. So something to keep in mind for the patrons or people who are like, should I be a patron? Well, I guess you should.
So yeah, there's fun stuff going on with basketball right now in the NBA and the WNBA. But I would highly recommend people check out the Olympic stuff, because the women's team, yes, they didn't beat Team WNBA All-Star. I think much like the NBA in these exhibitions, they're not trying to go too hard. You don't want to get hurt in a game that is ultimately meaningless. So I think that they will really ramp stuff up soon when the games start getting real. And I'm really excited to watch it. Olympics women's basketball is some of the best hoops you can watch. So I would recommend people check it out.
Me too.
And now, for the rest of this episode, we are going to do a very fun interview with someone who I have been in the podcasting world for a while with, Kyle Bandujo, who runs a sports movie podcast and now wrote a sports movie book. So we talk a whole lot about sports movies, some basketball, some non-basketball, and it's just also an interesting discussion about how a book gets made. So that will be the conclusion of this episode. Enjoy. Yes, as promised, we are here for the conclusion of this episode with a very fun interview with a very special guest, someone that I have done podcast stuff with for many a years, but someone that you might know as the host of Big Screen Sports, a fantastic movie podcast, and you might know them or you soon will know them after it becomes a 9 million time weekly New York Times bestselling book, the author of Movies with Balls. It's Kyle Bandujo. Kyle, how's it going?
Man, it's been years since we've been doing stuff together. That is weird. That is weird. It's going great. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you. We're excited to have you. It all started with you asking me to break down Quidditch scenes in Harry Potter as if it was a sports breakdown. And it's led to wonderful things. You and Adam even went head to head against each other in Meddling Adults.
We did.
Fun times all around.
Fun times. It's funny. I was on a podcast last night with Mike, our friends over at the Rank Kings. Just talking about the Room of Requirement and things that you would want to get in the Room Requirement, and it somehow devolved into a conversation about how Quidditch is bad. So all things lead to that topic.
I'll take it. I will gladly take it. But we are here mainly to talk about your new book, which is not out yet, right? At the time of recording, what's the release situation? I know you're on the Hype Up press tour currently.
Yes, yeah. It is available for pre-order. Movies with Balls, the greatest sports films of all time, analyzed and illustrated. Comes out September 24th, so that's when copies will be in hands. But yeah, available for pre-order wherever books are sold. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, which will buy a book from a local independent bookseller. I always recommend a book. I like buying from Bookshop.
Yeah, they're great.
Feels good. But we're definitely in the ramp up. Yeah, I'll be honest, I have no idea how to do any of this. So we're rocking around in the dark.
Well, that's why we are here. We know how to talk to basketball people who've written books because we've done it before.
Perfect.
For anyone unaware, the basic gist of the book, I know you're in. Do you want to talk about the inspiration? Because I think the story of how this came about was really cool, like with the ticket stubs and all that kind of thing molding into what it became.
Yeah. So this the genesis of this idea started with the illustrator of the book, my creative partner, Rick Bryson, who he's an ad guy. He's a graphic designer. One of the most creative people I've ever met. And he was fooling around one day and was like, what would the ticket stub for Rocky Balboa's fight against Ivan Drago in Russia, what would that have looked like? He longs for the days where we actually got ticket stubs and not, you know, the Ticketmaster QR code.
And it does stink. Had my entire childhood closet was just tickets to everything I went to. And I have this old ticket from when I first moved to Texas and the Rockets were terrible, where Shane Battier was the marquee player. Disrespect to Shane Battier, but it's this like giant goofy Rockets versus Spurs tickets where Shane Battier is going like, yeah. And like, it was a completely meaningless game. Our neighbors had free tickets that they couldn't use and they gave them to us. And me and my dad went on a whim. I didn't do homework that night. I watched basketball. And now that ticket is on my freaking door forever, and I remember that silly game, and now I just get 500 little things in my phone Apple wallet thing that I have to delete when I'm trying to get my Southwest boarding pass.
And for me, one of the great moments of my life was attending the 2016 World Series Game 5 when the Cubs comeback began.
Adam,
I was gonna ask you, you know, your about the Cubs, and I was like, we'll probably just get there.
Yeah, and also preemptively pass. But anyway, the ticket that I bought, I think I just printed out the QR code on a sheet of paper just to like feel like I had something tangible to keep. But like, that's not as satisfying as having a ticket that says World Series Game 5.
No, absolutely not. So that's where Rick was coming from with this. And he started kicking him around. He thought it would make a great coffee table book and he needed someone to write it. And he reached out to me and the initial idea was like, let's do a coffee table book, just like little blurbs around these tickets. And it evolved multiple times. At first, it turned into a fictional telling of these greatest games never played. That was the original title of historians researching these games, talking to, you know, people, fictional people, real people, people who had been at these games, had witnessed Rocky fight Drago or had been at the Teen Wolf game or things like that, like talking about the historical impact. It's what the book was initially sold at. Then we found out we would legally be in some trouble if that's the route that we continued to take. So we reverted, and now the book is essentially a love letter to 26 of the greatest fictional matchups in sports history. We break down these movies, why we love them, talk about a certain matchup in the game, game or if it's a movie like The Sandlot where there's not really a big showdown aside from like the Little League game. I wrote about breakdown of like the game, the 4th of July game, the game under the fireworks, why we love that, why that resonates. We pick a game MVP. We take time to ask if someone in the movie was good at their job or not. Like, were White Goodman's lawyers and dodgeball good? A survey says no. So things like that. And then we ask some questions, you know, have a couple fun segments and then a lot of awesome fun illustrations and visual stuff from Rick. So like a play map of each movie, of an interaction in each movie, like in The Sandlot, it's Benny the Jet running throughout the town. There's a ticket for each movie, which is great. A bunch of fun things. If you're a Tin Cup fan, we kind of envision that in, you know, 20 years after Tin Cup, Roy McAvoy would be doing a Tom Amansky style instructional video. So Rick banged out a VHS cover for that. So it just became a love letter to these fictional movies. And I need to step in and say, because I get this a lot, you know, is Remember the Titans in there? Is Miracle in there? Things like that. It is all fictional movies because the tickets for the game from Miracle, they exist. They're on eBay. They're expensive. And we cannot infringe on any of that. So it is all fictional games. So that hold the ticket from the game, you know, the Bourbon Bowl and the Water Boy. Rick did an awesome looking ticket for that. So a lot of the thing I can always say is like, you don't even have to read it. All the art looks awesome. And it looks great on a bookshelf. So yeah, that's kind of the summation of how it all came to be.
Yeah, just having had a chance to read the first couple books worth, as it were, like the attention to detail of the tickets is pretty astonishing.
Incredible.
I have to assume there's a lot of research involved. So I was looking at Bull Durham, and there's like everything down to the bar that they talk about in the film, like the rain check policy. And also it looks weathered. Like it's like the good version of when you're a kid doing school project and you burn the edge of the pages, but it's actually amazing.
Yeah. Man, that is
you got that papyrus font, Microsoft Word.
You accidentally light a whole page on fire and it's like, okay, gotta throw that one in the, yeah, no, Rick was very detailed. He went through a ton of work and he really thought out what would this ticket look like? What would the ads on it be like with, you know, with the Tin Cup one, there's a nice tribute to Waffle House because they talk about Waffle House and they have a spirited discussion about that. So he put in a ton of work to really think like, what did tickets look like in that era? Like he even we included a Knight's Tale. Knight's Tale, definitely a sports movie.
100%.
And he looked into what would like a piece of parchment or what would something from that era look like. So again, like it's not like a humble brag because I had nothing to do with it. All the art looks great. Like the work that he did is I'm just fortunate to have been able to write around it.
Yeah, it's really cool stuff, and I can't recommend it enough for people to check it out. So let's talk about the basketball movies specifically, since we are a basketball podcast here. And a couple basketball flicks have made their way into the book. The first of which, if we're going chronologically, would be White Men Can't Jump, which is an all-timer, an absolute all-timer of a movie. And it's now been remade into a not all-timer of a movie, but we're talking about the original, the actually good one. And man, I just love the stuff that you put in here. I also enjoy for all of the movies that you've got the little did you know, which is great. And I cannot believe this one. Is it okay if I give away the
did yeah, you know? Yeah, for sure. Okay. Give it all away. We're good.
The did you know for this one is that White Man Can't Jump is one of Stanley Kubrick's favorite films. And that's great. I freaking love that. One of my favorite fun facts is stuff when it's like guy who's accomplished in some tangentially related thing loves this thing you didn't think he would. And Kubrick loving White Man Can't Jump. I mean, yeah, he's a man of taste.
It's like Christopher Nolan loves Talladega Nights. That's what it was.
I was like, doesn't Nolan love some that goofy mm-hmm. movie? Yeah.
loves Talladega Nights. At the beginning of every episode or early in every episode of Big Screen Sports, we run through like IMDb trivia and pull out fun facts. And sometimes there is that fact there of very prestige person loves this like smutty movie sometimes. And it's like, just love that. Absolutely. But White Man Can't Jump, what's special about that is, and what I think like makes a good sports movie too, is having someone with passion behind it. And White Man Can't Jump being written and directed by Ron Shelton, same guy who wrote and directed Tin Cup, wrote and directed Bull Durham, who's a former minor league baseball player, played college basketball, like knows sports inside and out and puts an effort to the authenticity of making that movie look good and making them feel like basketball players and feel like athletes. And honestly, one of the biggest accomplishments of that movie is Wesley Snipes is notoriously a terrible athlete. and yet is in Major League and White Man Can't Jump, and they work around him significantly in his limitations. And because even like his shot doesn't look good, but like Woody Harrelson is a great athlete, like notoriously an awesome athlete. But yeah, anything. I mean, Shelton gets a lot of run in the book, but anything by someone who really takes the sport seriously and has passion about that usually comes through. And like those guys feel like street ballers in LA who talk a lot of smack. And White Man Can't Jump for me is just like a fun vibes movie. Like it's a fun ride, even though it's incredibly stressful.
You want to
just scream at Woody Harrelson and be like, "You're an idiot. Look at Rosie Perez. Mm-hmm. Treat her well."
Yeah.
you make a really good point though about part of what makes a sports film good just fundamentally, if you're a fan of sports, is do the sports scenes look realistic? Because one of the biggest things that takes me out of a movie, even if the acting is good, even if the cinematography is good, if everything else is good, but it's very clear that the people involved don't know how to play. Like, I didn't see the new Zendaya Challengers.
Oh, I was going to say, you better reference Challengers. It's not good tennis. It's tough.
It is immediately disqualifying if people who are supposed to be top 10 tennis players in the world are serving with a goddamn forehand grip. There's no way that can be on the movie poster if you expect people who actually understand the sport to see it. And I know I sound like, I don't know.
Look, no, on the flip side, whatever, the one with Will Smith about the Richard sisters, those girls can freaking play.
Yeah.
Like they can legitimately play.
Looks
tennis.
Awesome. Yeah. Mike, you know where I'm going here, but obviously like the biggest sinner is Trouble with the Curve, which is the worst baseball movie of all time.
It's a Justin Timberlake baseball. I've never even seen it because you hate it so much.
It's terrible. I mean, honestly, like you should watch it once and just like, because anyone who's watched one baseball game ever, but it's clear with a movie like that the passion to getting the sports right, not even how it looks on the screen, but even like the semantics of how people talk and how people act. And like, it's very easy to be like, that doesn't work. And it'll kill a movie versus a movie like Moneyball. When we did Moneyball on the podcast, we kind of took 30 minutes and we're just like, okay, these are the things that aren't realistic or just didn't really happen. But if you have Moneyball and it starts out and it's like, we've lost Giambi, we've lost Damon, and good news, we've got the best starting rotation, the AL, we've got an AL MVP at shortstop, like we're fine, then it credits roll. So there are things that movies have to do to make it more compelling, but you still have to put effort into the sports and making it seem like the actors are athletes, that the action looks good, that, you know, like, and I think it elevates movies that are just fine, like in terms of like basketball movies, not in the book, but like Coach Carter, I think all the basketball action looks awesome and it makes it a really fun watch.
Or even basketball scenes. I think one of the most compelling things of the new Longest Yard with Adam Sandler is that you don't expect the character or Adam Sandler to be good at basketball unless you know that Adam Sandler can hoop. And then you watch that scene and you're like, oh my God, he's actually good. And that like makes the scene hit so much harder because the whole point of that scene is, oh my God, he's actually good.
Yeah. And there's a dude who worked on The Longest Yard. He worked on The Replacements. His company has The Rookie, a bunch of movies. His name is Mark Robert Ellis. I give him some shine in the book as a sports movie Hall of Famer, but his company does sports choreography and works with movies. And when movies make the effort to give them the leeway, hey, you pick the extras, you tell us how this is supposed to go, you put in the effort to make the sports look good, it always elevates the movie, even if the movie itself on the surface, the sum of all the parts are just fine. But if the sports are good, it really elevates it. When movies don't put in that effort, it really takes away. And like, I just think it all comes down to it. If the people behind it are not just making a sports movie for, you know, for another reason, like Summer Catch being, hey, this movie was about getting Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jessica Biel in theaters in the summer. It was not about the sports versus like, Mike, I'm going to give some shine to the Yankees. 61, which is an incredible baseball movie, but it's because it's from Billy Crystal, who loves the Yankees, and he wanted every single part of that to look good. And when sports movies are made by people who are passionate about sports, it's why, Mike, I can't remember if we talked about this, but Hustle. I loved Hustle with Sandler.
Oh, yeah.
Who loves it's basketball. Yeah, who loves basketball. And like when the passion is there for the sports, I think it elevates the movie because it turns into the dialogue turns into like as a sports fan, you react to that. Everyone in Hustle talks like they've been around the NBA because half of Hustle played in the NBA. And like that movie for me is like that's top tier. That's what I want in a sports movie.
Yeah. And I think Hustle does something that also is done by another one of the basketball movies that you've done in the book, Blue Chips does, where Blue Chips has Shaq in it. And it just helps everything become so much more believable when you're doing a movie about basketball players, when you have cast literal basketball players.
He Got Game is a great example of that.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Denzel, the funny story, He Got Game, not in the book, but I love He Got Game. Mm-hmm. The fun story with that is that in that climactic scene where him and Ray Allen are playing one-on-one, Spike Lee told Denzel, like, hey, try to take it to him. And he scored three, those 3 points he scores on him are real. And Ray Allen thought like they were just acting. And then Ray Allen got pissed. And so a lot of that is real. In Blue Chips, the finale, the person who we tabbed as the MVP for Blue Chips is the, I can't remember what like the actual role, but it was the guy who handled the basketball and the extras and things like that. That last game where they play against a Bob Knight coached Indiana, that is 10 real basketball players on the floor at all time. Like you've got Shaq and Penny, but like Bobby Hurley's on that Indiana team. And it's a ton of guys who played. Like they said, go get us real basketball players, and then they rolled the ball out in the middle and was just like, make it happen. And that's one of my favorite sports movie scenes, because it's really like, hey, this is a compressed college basketball game where you are on the sidelines watching this action, like you're in the flow. And then you've got Shaq and Penny when, you know, right. The cool thing about Blue Chips is that like it in a lot of ways started that mini Magic run. Because when Shaq was playing with Penny, he was like, I want to play with this guy. And Penny was going in the draft, and Shaq did not want the Magic to end up with Weber. I think that's chronicled pretty well in the 30 for 30 about the Magic. But like that's one of the cool game within a game things of Blue Chips, is watching this Shaq and Penny combo. And then you kind of wonder what might have been if Shaq stays in Orlando.
Yeah, it's very interesting how it all falls into play, what kind of these like ripple effects of the movies could be. And I think that's an interesting thing about your book particularly, is like, take us through deciding what to put in. Like, is it a particular, like, every single chapter we got to get like this? Because I think it's fun things like when I think of White Man Can't Jump, I think of the trash talk and the outfit choices. And those are like two of the subsections. And I got to imagine that it's really hard to narrow down these like very expansive movies and then just be like, cool, all right, 2 hour film. We got to make it like 6 to 10 pages. How did you decide what to put in, what to leave out, what to make those subsections in the book?
We cut like 15,000 to 20,000 words. Wow. It was tough. Jeez. It was like killing your dogs. there were certain sections. So each chapter is structured, you know, the movie, the game, like what we're talking about. Is it the game at the end? Is it something else? The breakdown of that game, pick an MVP, pick someone who's good at their job. And then a couple movies, like tabbing, adding some different sections, like things we wanted to talk about. Like one of this comes to mind, I actually don't think it made the book, but I ranked like the top five most painful hits in dodgeball. I can't remember if it made the book, but like stuff like that. Like, so I would, you know, when I was doing this, when I'd seen all these movies a million times, but like when I would do it, I would watch them over and over again while I was writing them, like I was covering a sporting event, and I would pick out certain things. Like I've been on this hill for longer than when I wrote this book, but one of the things I wrote about for Field of Dreams was like the brother is improperly like maligned in this movie because he just thinks that his brother-in-law has gone crazy. It's not his fault that he's just trying to save his sister and his financial future here. So it was picking out things like that and finding like which subjects we really wanted to dive into. And it ended up coming down to us learning, okay, this is how a book works. This is how, okay, you get a certain amount of space and like pages are ordered in like sheets or something like that. And it's okay, we got to be at like 276 or something like that. So some stuff had to go, but then some stuff had to be filled. It was a weird combo of picking like what stayed, what went. And so for some movies, I mean, there was, I think like for Tin Cup, I had a million different sections, and that was one of the ones, and like White Man Can't Jump, one of the ones too, where we reached out to experts in these fields or in these movies to talk about. With White Man Can't Jump, it was ESPN's Clinton Yates, just on the dynamic of Billy and Sidney. Him giving us the anecdote that like that movie is why he wanted to move to LA, which is where he lives now. Days of Thunder, we talked to ESPN's Ryan McGee, who's just an expert in motorsports, and how that movie changed how NASCAR is covered and how it shot, like, you know, the stylings of that. We talked to a couple golf writers on Happy Gilmore and Tin Cup. We talked to Kyle Porter from CBS Sports on like how big of a driving advantage would Happy Gilmore's driving be. And we kind of surmised, came to the conclusion that like if a average to below average tour player could drive it like Happy Gilmore, they'd be the best player in the world. So it was things like that. And that was a fun part too, of like talking to people and getting a real life take on these movies. But it was difficult figuring out what fits, like what to go at for certain movies and what to leave on the cutting floor.
Yeah. And it's interesting, not only when you look at just the different types of movies, because I think what's fun in this book is that you've done things where you take like more traditional sports movies, like your Tin Cups and your The Naturals and stuff like that. But then also, I love that you include things like Hot Rod, which is like tangentially a sports movie, but it's such a good film. And I love taking the absurdity and some of the ones that are like more of a stretch as opposed to the ones that are no-brainers, but then treating them all with the same sort of sincerity of like, no. Yeah, we're all operating like this is a sports movie. We are breaking down everything. We're not, you know, tongue-in-cheeking this entire chapter just because it's a little bit more of an unconventional pick. And I think that's what's fun, is that you take it with the same amount of seriousness in every chapter, even though like the whole thing is fun. It's not like you have, well, this is a goofy one, guys. Like, no, we're breaking down Hot Rod.
Yeah, we got a real doctor to break down the kind of medical report that Rod would be looking at after that crash. And I was just like, use as many fancy terms as you've got. And it is a very detailed report that like the TLDR is like Rod would be dead. For sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, that one was fun. There were like 15 to 18 movies that were like in the book with a bullet, 100% doing these. And then there was a discussion of we wanted to have some variety. Like, women's sports are horribly misunderrepresented in the sports movie canon. There's very few. We were able to get, there's She's the Man and there's Bennett Like Beckham, but like that's an area where
two classics.
There could be so much growth in that. There's so many more incredible stories to tell. And then, you know, some just general variety, like A Knight's Tale for like people our age. A Knight's Tale was a huge deal. Like people love A Knight's Tale. Same with Hot Rod. That was one that like we had to convince the publisher, like, no, trust us. People like Hot Rod. Hot Rod needs to stay in. And then there were some tough ones on the cutting room floor, like Warrior, which I love, but no one has seen.
And
with Tom Hardy?
That is with Tom Hardy. That movie, Warrior, like, I don't watch UFC. It interests me not at all. And that movie, I would watch it 7 days a week. It is an incredible movie. Directed by Gavin O'Connor, who did Warrior, who did that basketball movie with Affleck, The Way Back. His whole thing is like big chill scenes.
I actually thought that's
pretty good. Yeah. Gavin O'Connor on sports movies, like, if he ever does another one, I'm there first night, because I think Miracle, I think Warrior, I think The Way Back, like I think that's three solid ones in the resume.
You mentioned that Trouble with the Curve was the easiest one to omit, and a lot of people don't know this. Trouble with the Curve is actually what the cop asked Justin Timberlake when he swerved out of his lane and got pulled over in the Hamptons.
Yeah.
Trouble with the Curve. It did ruin the world tour, but
it ruined the world. Yeah. God, that's been such a wonderful.
Do you have a definitive, like, what was the most heartbreaking one to omit? And if so, why was it Rookie of the Year?
No, he's going to say Little Big League. I know it.
Little Big League. So the problem, like, there was, we had to factor in like the commercial appeal for these books, because we need at least if someone's looking through this at Barnes and Noble, and they have to, there has to be something for everyone. And Little Big League would have been like the one for me. Like,
underrated.
So underrated.
I feel strongly that the reason that it's not as beloved is because they lose in the end.
I don't see it. Well, maybe I truly think that the reason it's not as beloved is because Rookie of the Year came around, and Rookie of the Year is about the Cubs and Little Big League is about the Twins. I think if he ran like the Mets, I think it'd be, mm-hmm. I think it'd be a lot different. But them being so close together, and despite Little Big League being the far superior movie, and
so much better
in every, I think, like, Mike, you and I did a podcast on that with, mm-hmm. With friend of the show, Danny Weiser. And like, I think half the time we just kept bringing up, like, this was the baseball movie for like the pro baseball movie for kids. This was it. So that one, honestly, it didn't even like make it to the draft stage, because we were just like, no one, this just doesn't have it. Warrior was a tough cut. The Longest Yard, the original Longest Yard, because Rick had a great ticket for that.
So,
and
good.
That's one of the ones that like really jump started the 70s sports movies. That was a tougher cut too.
Mm.
We started with 40 and it was pretty easy to cut like 10. And then it just came down to giving us some variety, you know, with commercial appeal being the tiebreaker.
I would hope that this book does so well that you can make a sequel and then you can make like the Sickos version. And then you can just do the movies that like are really good that are maybe more underrated, like A Little Big League.
I would also love to do movies that suck. I think it would be bought by no one and there would be people who would get very angry, but just like how to fix movie. Like Trouble with the Curve has, you could fix that movie. If you give me like five different things, I could fix it really quickly because it's about a subject that I love, which is the MLB draft. There are other things like Rookie of the Year you could fix. I need to know what's going on with the Cubs.
Yeah.
You can't just grab a relief pitcher and then suddenly the whole you don't tell us why the team is right. good. Whereas Little Big League tells us why the team is good. And a lot of guys cook in that kitchen and we learn a lot about the characters. A sequel would be awesome because there's a lot of stuff that, you know, we did. Like I mentioned Coach Carter. Coach Carter would probably have been left out because that was based on a true story. But like Coach Carter was like a TNT classic for me. Like watched it quite a bit. And like Hustle would be one that I would love to would break down and talk about. Like I thought Hustle was awesome.
You could do a just basketball one. You could do, because Space Jam is in the mix.
Space Jam.
Well, no, but that one's based on basketball. A true story.
So oh, you're right. Yeah, sorry.
Mike, did we do Eddie? Were you on the show when we did Eddie?
That's no.
Like Whoopi Goldberg, right?
Whoopi Goldberg coaches the Knicks. That one is tough. That one is real tough.
I've never actually seen it because my only knowledge of it is that it has not aged well. There's a couple basketball movies that were like coming out when I was a little too young.
Juwanna Man will not be talked about in a sequel. Eddie is only available, at least when I did the pod, bootleg copy uploaded on YouTube. That's
interesting.
I had to find that on YouTube. And then Mike, when we did Angels in the Outfield, I had to send you guys DVDs.
Because that you could only do DVDs. And then because of the weird like publishing rights for Disney.
Yeah.
Very strange.
So
it's
strange.
Not on any streaming or online thing. But then it was on a flight that I was on.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense.
I love Angels in the Outfield.
It's a solid one.
Two Best Actor Oscar winners in Angels in the Outfield.
So I actually got to interview Danny Glover for a TV station that I worked for in college. And he was there for like a Black History Month event reading poetry of like Langston. It was a very serious interview. But I also had some leeway in terms of what I could ask him. And it took a lot of restraint for me to not ask him if we would be a family again if the Angels won the pennant. But I did feel that it would have ultimately reflected poorly on me. But my question for you is, as you know, Kyle, like the whole angle with Horse is like we're trying to be a basketball podcast for people who may or may not be interested in basketball at all or to varying degrees. What would be your sales pitch of this book to people who are like a little bit into sports, not into sports at all? Like what would you say the appeal of it is for those?
I think that's the beautiful thing about sports movies is that for a lot of these movies, you don't need to love sports to love the movie. I think a lot of people have been brought into, you know, sports movies because there's much more to the movie and we don't just talk about the sports. Like, you know, I'm reading my own writing makes me like nauseated. And like every time I open the book, I find something I would change. But when I was breaking down that 4th of July game in the Sandlot, like I was talking more about childhood and what that game means and the fireworks illuminating those kids' eyes and everything that's going on in that moment. And like the Sandlot for me, like loved it as a kid. It's something I've now gotten to share with my own kid and he loves. And I think there's a lot of that in sports movies and why we love them. And, you know, at the end of the day, if sports movies aren't for you, they definitely are for your dad. So it makes a great gift. Like give it to your dad.
Your dad needs
a book to put in his office and collect dust and never open it because that's what dads do. My dad watches My Cousin Vinny every time it's on his TV. I got
that's
him
My
Cousin
too.
Vinny
it's
on DVD good... for Christmas one year, like 15 years ago. It's still in the plastic. Dads will not open gifts, but they like receiving them. So that's the pitch.
Yes.
And the key with this book is because of all the graphics, it can do the thing, which is very nice, where every time you get to a page in a book that's got like a picture or an infographic, it's like, oh, ho, look at me. I've read a page, but all I did was look at a cool picture.
That's exactly it. It's like 270 pages, but it's like half that of reading. So you've got a lot there.
You got to bump those Goodread numbers, baby. You want to make your end of year stats look impressive. Be like, look at this very long book that I chomped through. But then there's very cool infographics. Like one of my favorites is that what if Teen Wolf got a sneaker deal? Sneaker. I want the sneaker in my life with the fur-lined ankle support and the moon pump technology. Come on.
Rick had so many specs of that sneaker done. It was like he Teen Wolf is one of his there was a lot of Teen Wolf stuff we cut out because Rick loves Teen Wolf. There's a lot to chew on in that movie because it is a ridiculous piece of pop culture. And so like everything from scouting reports to the sneaker. Yeah, their Teen Wolf is absolutely insane. Just batshit crazy.
It's a wild one. Okay, now that we have you here, if you've got to just rank, we have not prepped this, so don't hold Kyle to the fire, anyone. If you were ranking just purely your favorite basketball sports movies as the most knowledgeable sports person that I know, could you give me like a top three or a top five of just basketball sports movies, especially if listeners have not seen a lot of basketball?
And
sports
are you
movies.
Including things that are based on a true story as well?
Oh, yeah. Any basketball movie that exists, like what's your go to?
I will, but the number one that's based on a true story would not be in my top three, top five.
Which is
Hoosiers.
I was going to say Hoosiers. Okay. Yeah.
I do love like the shot at the end of the game and stuff and the music, like that's good. But Hoosiers, there's some problems. The true story itself is kind of a bummer. Kiss by the fence between Barbara Hershey and Gene Hackman is one of the most physically uncomfortable things I've ever seen. I've never seen a less like romantic kiss in my life. It's Blue Chips and White Man Can't Jump for me are like 1-2. Love both of them. Love them for different reasons. I think Nick Nolte's performance in Blue Chips is incredible. It's completely unhinged. Kind of a Bobby Knight clone. I love having Shaq and Penny in there. It's not a perfect movie, but it's so fun to watch. White Man Can't Jump is just a riot. Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes are a great duo. I will always go to them. Man, especially if I'm doing a top five, Hustle's definitely in there. I think I've seen Hustle like 3 or 4 times since it came out. I loved how passionate it was about basketball. And you could tell like Sandler obviously just loves basketball so much. What is the lead's name? Is he the...
Juan Hernan Gomez is the real player.
Is he still in the league or did he go overseas?
I think, I don't know if he is anymore. He had like had potential. I remember he was on my NBA 2K19 roster as like a solid bench rotation guy. But I don't think he's... No, yeah. So he is now on, I think, a Greek team. So he kind of fizzled out. But Anthony Edwards, who is in that movie and does a very good job of trash talking, is now one of the greatest players in the league, and he's on the Olympic team doing fun stuff as well.
I think that the two things that Hustle does the best are, number one, showing the immense amount of work that has to go into just getting into any professional sports league, and also how like dingy and grimy and difficult it is to work in sports. I think people have this idea that like working in sports is fun and you're going to the games, and like most of working in sports, and I say this as someone who had a very unpleasant experience interning with a minor league baseball team, most of working in sports is not glamorous and it's not particularly fun, and sometimes it can even like ruin it for you. And like the Adam Sandler character is one that you can see it's like costing him his personal life, the involvement that he has with sports.
Yeah, working in sports is a difficult career for the athletes who are getting paid millions of dollars. So bring that down to the people who are not getting paid anywhere close to that, and it is a near impossible career. Anthony Edwards' performance in Hustle, I was like, I think more of him as a player. Like, I feel like this guy has the juice. Like, I thought he was incredible. I appreciated that he was like, yeah, I'll come in and play a villain. Absolutely. I'll just be the worst person. And so I have stock of him coming out of the walls. I also, this is a dad pick. Like this gets lumped in with Ford versus Ferrari, but Air.
The Jordan shoe deal.
Yeah,
one with
there's
Damon
not a ton of
Affleck.
Basketball in it, but it's like
no, almost none.
Very much about basketball. Yeah,
almost none. And it's the Matt Damon stars is Matt Damon with a belly, but I still really enjoy it. And then like Coach Carter.
Yeah.
I've probably seen Coach Carter more than any other basketball movie. It did the TNT run for all of the 2000s, all of the aughts. The basketball is real good. I think Samuel L. Jackson's real good in it. It's got some, got some fun lines, you know, it introduced everyone to, overworking your athletes. Like the problem with Coach Carter and Miracle is too many youth and high school baseball coaches or high school sports coaches thought the message from that movie was, if I make them run a lot, they'll be good. If I exhaust right. them, they will be yeah. good, and not they will hate your guts. They will want to spite you. It just doesn't. You have to have some buy-in from your team if you want to torture them physically. And a lot of coaches miss the mark there.
Yeah, no, it's tough. It's tough when people miss out on key themes and stuff, but they won't miss out on key themes if they read your book, because it's very good and it breaks down all of the important parts of the film. And look, man, I think it's great. I was very happy to comb through the PDF version of it, and I can't wait to have myself a physical copy to live on my coffee table as well, even though I don't have a coffee table. It'll be, you know, off to the side. I have like a little side table, so it can work as a side table.
It's a great
table
side
book
table
as well.
Book. Looks good in a bookshelf. Good door stopper, like it's solid size. So if you just need something to prop something up, like it's there for you.
Yeah, you so hear this that? Is just, you hear that, dads?
This is something, I guess, just now that I have a friend who's written a book, I've always been intrigued when it comes into like the minutia of picking the physical stuff. Like how much control did you have over like, this is what the color of the cover will be, this is what the texture of the hardcover will be? Like how much in the weeds were you able to get, or was it a lot of the publishers like, we got this, don't
so
worry about it, guys?
Rick did all the design, picked all the color. He did all the, because there were a bunch of variations of the cover, of the design. Like Rick is a major tinkerer, and it was getting stuff approved by the publisher. They did say that's a little unusual that like the illustrator also lays out their own book, but like Rick's been doing this for years in terms of like ad design and graphics. As far as like the structure and the size and stuff, we had no say. They were just kind of telling us. So that was very nerve-wracking for me personally, because in my mind, what I wanted was, and this is a book that that helped us get this book sold, and someone who has been very kind since we started promoting this book and helping, but Shea Serrano's Movies and Other Things, I wanted that size, that styling, whatever. And that's exactly what it came out like. That was a relief to me. So like, if you have that book, like they are next to each other on my bookshelf. They are the same height, and I believe the same length. Like they look so that styling, it was all up to the publisher, which I have learned is a very nerve-wracking thing when it is all up to the publisher.
Wow. Well, and I would recommend it, because I am in this new era, and you are as well, as new dads, or dads with newborns. That style of book, I've been reading Shea Serrano's Basketball and Other Things recently, which is a good one. And I did this with the Wrap Your Book. It's good to have a book that is like divided into small sections, because I don't necessarily currently have as much time where I can read a whole long novel and get engrossed in a whole story. But I can read like, here's 10 pages about one thing, because I have enough time to do that before I got to get something else for the baby. So if you are in any walk of life where you don't have the barrier to reading is, oh man, I don't have a full time, I just have a couple of minutes, it's great, pick up and put down. There's lots of key stopping points.
Because that's, I mean, the thing they don't tell you about having kids is they take time. Like, no, why does no one talk about that?
No one
talks about that. But it's things like that in snippets. The thing I would throw out and recommend, if you guys haven't, so Wright Thompson has a book, I think it's on my shelf somewhere, I think it's called The Cost of These Dreams. But it is just an anthology of some of Wright Thompson, who's an incredible writer, ESPN, some of his greatest stories. And it's just like 15 of them in one book. So you can read like one full length story, like a chapter, and it's a great story. You get a beginning, middle, and conclusion. That is a great dad book, because it's like, I don't have an hour to comb through a book. I got 15 to 20 minutes. That's perfect. So yeah, Movies with Balls works for that too. But also like Wright Thompson's book, which has been in paperback for years, is also great.
So if you're going to get one book, get Kyle's book.
Yeah.
But if you're going to get two,
get Wright's book.
Get Kyle's book twice. Yeah.
That's exactly. Get it for your dads, your grandparents, your aunts, your uncles. It's white elephant gifts. It looks great. Yeah. If you're going to give something, and you, even if you know they're not going to use it, you need it to look great. So it does look good. It is a great piece of decor. That's my sales pitch on 50,000 words I wrote. It's a great piece of decor.
Well, I think you've teed up the book very well. You've already said people can pre-order it wherever, preferably bookshop.org, because then it's local bookstores and not Jeff Bezos getting your money. So that's very fun. But also, do you want to give a shout to Big Screen Sports in case people want to hear more of you and a lot of me talking about various sports films or movies that are not sports films that we've decided are sports films, such as Pitch Perfect and
Yes, and it's that kind of, it's that line of thinking that has maybe changed the intro to the show, to the show where the podcast where all movies are sports movies, because we have recently done like Twister and Miami Vice, but have also done, you know, Cool Runnings. And then last week, what was last week? Man, I'm getting old. Big Lebowski. So things like that. Yeah. Every Monday, coming at you wherever you get your podcast, we're breaking down, you know, really any movie at this point. We do rom-com month. We did an animated movie month earlier this year. While my often co-host Caroline Darney is just out gallivanting in Europe, me and another off co-host Alex McDaniel will be breaking down season one of Shorzy, the hockey show that you can find on Hulu, which is a lot of fun. So we're doing that for most of August, but yeah, available every Monday wherever you get your podcast.
Awesome. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for joining. This was a delight, and congrats again. It's a cool book, and I'm excited
thank
for
you.
Hopefully it comes and sweeps the nation with its movies with balls.
That's the hope. That's the hope. Yeah. Movies with Balls, the greatest sports films of all time, analyzed and illustrated, because we needed the colon to make sure that Dude Bros didn't see it and go, movies with testosterone. So it's sports balls, not balls balls.
Sports balls. There we go. Good. Great. Yay.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Of course.
Thank you. Congrats.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Horse. Horse is hosted by Adam Amawala and Mike Schubert. Our editor is Kensei Suramaki. The music is by Bettina Campomanes. The website is by Kelly Schubert. The art is by Allison Wakeman. And the social media is by both of the Horse Boys.
Thank you to our producer-level patrons, Polly Burge, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang, Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry is getting sick of Not Like Us. Wah, 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 wah.
Yeah, bang, 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 bang.
Hi, Trish. Chase Underulo, Haley Zink, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby as a vampire, Chelsea's cousin, Ginger Spurs boy, Balls to the Walls, and Mats Furley. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Horse Hoops and on Twitter at Horse_Hoops because...
The Horse Hoops Twitter account was run by the person who created Trouble with the Curve, and just Kyle got him shut down.
I've never seen it, and I don't plan to. Yeah.
Not for me.
Yeah. Go to our website, horsehoops.com, for links to many things, but definitely not to Trouble with the Curve.
Mm-mm. And if you want to support the Horse Boys and get access to cool things like this Olympic discussion we alluded to earlier, you can go to patreon.com/horsehoops to get a bunch of other cool stuff there. You can also go to horsehoops.com/merch to get Sup Nerds shirts and other fun digital items. But we will close out this episode, as we always do, by saying something on count three.
Do you have anything?
You know what? I am not one for obnoxious patriotism, but I'm very excited about the basketball teams. I'll give it a USA on three.
I think that's fine. It's the one time where being overly patriotic is valid. You get a two-week window where you can just like the sports and not worry about the rest of the things that come along with our country that is destroying the world.
Exactly.
So, let's give a USA
so on three. We'll do a USA three USA. Times, as is custom.
Great.
USA, but purely in terms of sports.
Just the sports.
We're just talking about the sports.